So lean and tell me what kind of a dog you have. Let me see this.
She's a Shih Poo. She's a Shih Tzu Poodle mix. I don't like shedding, and she's asleep. And
Are you allergic?
I'm not allergic, but I don't like, I'm very clean. In sobriety, I've gotten very clean.
Simone Finch is clean and sober. And she's a clean person. And she's neat. And she's a neat person. And I just had a blast talking to her. And she gets interviewed a lot because she created the Hulu hit series Single Drunk Female. And she's only worked on successful projects, which not everyone in Hollywood can say. And we had a remarkably real, authentic conversation. And despite being interviewed lots of times, she said, "I asked good questions, so take that." I never know what little soundbite my buddy Brian Baltashevitz is going to pick, but I can't wait to hear it because this is a great show.
There is a block, you know, some at times, and then there's other times where it's so fast and furious that I almost can't type fast enough to keep up with what's happening in my head.
This is In Her Words, a podcast from manlisting.com, featuring one man listening to the stories of real women in their own words. In Her Words, a conversation worth hearing, because every woman deserves to be heard.
Hello there. I'm Stuart Watson, and this is In Her Words, a podcast in which I try to listen to women after asking some good questions. We have two rules, as you know. We talk about what the women want to talk about, what they're interested in, passionate about, and we don't talk about anything they don't want to talk about. And in talking to the creator of the hit TV series, streaming series on Hulu, Single Drunk Female, Simone Finch, Finch like the bird, you can find her on Instagram, I learned a whole bunch of things, and we laughed so hard we pegged the audio meter sometime, just all the way over there into the red. I laughed so hard. It was thoroughly enjoyable, and I think and hope you'll enjoy it too, Simone Finch.
Where were you born?
I was born in Boston.
Hospital or home?
Hospital. My mother, it was a long labor, and they wanted a girl really badly, and they got me. And I grew up in first 2 years in Cambridge. My mom bought a triple decker and then sold it. Now she regrets that decision, because now that, you know, we all know what's happened with real estate. Anyway,
I'll
so
say.
yeah, then we moved to the suburbs of Boston called Melrose, Massachusetts, and very idyllic, bucolic town. A lot of Republicans for Massachusetts, and not that there's anything wrong with that. And just wanted to say that. And yeah, it was very like safe and very very clean, very just sort of not a lot going on, you know,
What
when
took your parents to Cambridge and then Massachusetts? How far back did they go?
so my parents are from New York City, actually. My mom is from Brooklyn, and my dad was from the Upper West Side. So my dad was at BU studying music. He was a cellist. And my mother was, so she was a teacher, and in New York City in the early 70s was bankrupt. They had no teaching jobs, but Boston had teaching jobs. So she just, I don't know, both of my parents kind of like, it feels like they didn't have a lot of thought into these things, but I won't judge them for that. Anyway, so they both moved to Boston and then ran into each other. They went to high school, sorry. They went to the same high school in New York City, run into each other 15 years later. My mom sees my dad running on Broadway Street in Cambridge. She rolls down her VW Bug window and says, "Did you go to High School Music and Art?" And he said he did. And they brought their yearbooks to their first date.
Oh my God. And Are they the like the two that never would have dated in high school, but now that a few years have passed?
I think so. Yeah. I never thought of that, but yeah, he was like the popular older guy and she was a sophomore. So she was like, oh, like she was pining after him, but he didn't know who she was.
But now, I mean, she made the first move. That's pretty bold.
My mom's pretty bold lady. Yeah. She does not, she takes no prisoners. Yeah.
And yeah. What parts of your personality are you like, yep, that's my mom, I'm just channeling my mom?
I would say every time I talk to customer service, I'm channeling my mother.
And what does that conversation sound like?
Sometimes they are not, giving me what I want. And I go, that's not acceptable. She taught me, my mom really taught me not to, again, take no prisoners. Like, and it's worked in Hollywood, which is very, there's a lot of, how do I put this delicately? You have to stand up for yourself in every job. But in Hollywood, it seems like it's a constant thing where you have to.
I feel like it's understood more so for women.
Yes, correct. I believe that is true. Thank you for pointing that out.
So yes. Tell me a Hollywood story that you can, in which you sort of channeled your mom's sense of, in the South, what we say, Simone, is, I'm not trying to be ugly. I'm not trying to be ugly, but.
Yeah.
So tell me a story.
All right, I'll tell you a story. So I hope this is okay. I'm sure it's fine. There's a drinking dream in season one where she sees her father. And that's true. That's from my life. I see my father in my drinking dreams. I haven't had one in a while, though, which makes me mad, but also is probably better. Anyways, so there was a little bit of confusion about that, about where that fit in the episode, if it worked, if it didn't work. And I kept saying, this is going to work. This is going to work. I promise you this will work. And there was some back and forth and some stuff and whatever. And, I said, no, like, this is really important for the show. It's important for a character. And it's important to see him, I think, because we had never saw the father on screen. And in the end, it was that dream was compared to Tony Soprano's dreams.
Wow.
Right? And I never thought of that. I never thought of that. But like, that's a pretty sweet comparison. Yeah. And I think people really connected to it and really loved it. And especially a lot of alcoholics that watch the show, sober alcoholics or not, whatever. They really loved that. So yeah, that is an example of that where I thought, I have this instinct and I'm going to follow that instinct.
We all get notes. If you're in the theater, you get notes. And notes usually are taken to mean criticism, but it doesn't have to be. It's just like, this is a note. What is the difference between the way a woman on the West Coast will give notes and the way a man will give notes?
I think, unfortunately, men are still better at being more direct with their notes, whereas I find, and I include me in this, I feel like sometimes we women can be circuitous in our giving of notes, and then that makes it more confusing sometimes. Again, I'm just talking about myself here, but yeah, I think there is something to that, because I personally respond better to directness than anything else, but you gotta take what comes to you.
What's an example of a direct? You're not mean, you're just being direct and you're giving a good note, something that gets a change.
Season one, I was on set with the actors for the almost the entire shoot. I guess for me, a few times I had to remind them that sober people don't do X or notice you're noticing the drink, right? Because I always notice drinks. You know what I mean? Like, even
though me too.
Right. Even though I don't drink anymore, I always notice drinks. So I guess like in that way, like asking them to put their mind in a sober mindset or telling them, as a sober person, we do this or we do that. Like, don't know if that answers your question, but I feel like that helping people get into that, think about things in a different way, I guess, or helping people, sharing my experience so that they understand what it means for the characters, I guess, in a way. That's been the most helpful.
What were you like as a little girl, like 2 or 3 years old?
My mom says I was an imp.
What does that mean? Did she have some video? Let's go to the tape.
I was very playful. I was very funny. I was outgoing. Apparently when I was little, I would say I'm the boss.
That's good.
So not much has changed. I think I was really, just pretty funny, pretty wild.
The birth order, you are where for your mother? In the birth order.
I'm the second. I'm the second. Yeah.
And you have brother, sister?
I have an older brother, and he and I are very different.
How many years?
3 years. He's very serious, and he went to Harvard and Juilliard, and he is not an alcoholic, and he, very, very different. And I'm, a little
did
wild.
Did he have a talk with you? Did he have the Simone? Get your shit together.
He said he never did that, but I went to, so my dad passed away when I was 20 of leukemia and complications with treatment of leukemia, I should say. And I went to Europe for 2 months. And the one thing he said to me said, so you're just going to go to Europe and get drunk for 2 months. That's like the closest he ever came to telling me.
And your response was?
I was like, I'm not going to just get drunk. it's not true. I did do other things, but I did get drunk a lot. Yeah.
And did you say, you make that sound like a bad thing?
I know. Yeah.
And did you also say, did you play the dead father card? You say, our father has just died. Yeah. If I want to go to Europe and get drunk.
I did. Yeah. I played that card for 7 years, 8 years. Yeah.
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 And what did your mother say about that card?
I think my mother was more okay. She was also grieving. I mean, they were together for 27 years and she was pretty devastated. We were all devastated, but I will say we all showed our grief differently.
Yeah.
I don't blame her but I don't think she was paying attention as much because she was so heartbroken.
I may be wrong about this. Are you Jewish?
I'm half Jewish. Yes. My dad was Jewish.
Did you have a bat mitzvah? Were you only the high holidays? Were you like just the matzo ball soup? What kind of Jew are you?
I'm a just the matzo ball soup kind of Jew. No. So my dad, his father loved Christmas trees. Okay. This is a true story. And they were in Cleveland. So the first couple of years, both my parents got divorced. So the first couple of years, my dad lived in Cleveland. And then my mom also was on army bases all over the world. Anyways, so he got a tree, a Christmas tree. And the local rabbi said, you can't have a Christmas tree. And my grandfather said, F you, I'm going to have a Christmas tree. So that was the beginning of the end of any kind of Jewish instruction, let's say. So I do love matzo ball soup. I do love pastrami on rye. I did get bat mitzvah in Israel during birthright.
Oh, my God.
When I was 26. And you know what? It was pretty cool. I'm glad I did. So at the beginning of the trip, they were like, we're going to do bar and bat mitzvahs in Israel, on the trip. If you want to do it, let us know. And at first I thought, this is stupid. I don't care. Whatever. I was still drinking. And then at the very end, I was like, oh, doing it, and they were like, okay. So we had to learn some Hebrew, we had to do it in front of everyone else. I mean, it was really cool and I'm glad I did it. So I had it older. Yeah
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So did you date any Jewish guys or not date Jewish guys? Was there any yes or no prejudice one way or the other?
I think that my mother would love for me to marry a Jewish man. Which is why I find it hard to date them, because it would make her too happy.
So even if they're these great guys, you're
I'm like, I don't know about that. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's I think I'm an equal opportunity dater. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I think. Yeah.
And if this is out of bounds, let me know. But I heard you tell your story, and you said there's some schmuck in Charlotte who refused to follow you across the country. And I'm yeah. like, do I need to have a conversation with someone, Simone, and tell them just...
No, he's getting married now. We're fine. We're still friends.
It's like, you, dude, you fucked up. I mean,
he did, but that's okay. That's okay. I had to get sober. I wasn't sober yet, and I had to get sober.
Are you going to the wedding?
No, no.
Will you be invited to the wedding?
No.
No. Okay. You sound at peace with this, though.
I am at peace. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he's found his person, and I hope to find mine. Yeah.
Now, are you in? Right now, are you in? I have no idea where you are. Are you in Venice Beach? Are you in?
No, I'm in North Hollywood. I bought a house in North Hollywood 2 years ago.
I don't know what that means, but I know buying a house is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. North Hollywood is like, it's in the valley, so it's above. So, you know, it's not in the sexy part of LA. It's in the more like not sexy part of LA. So, yeah.
But I mean, you don't have gunshots coming in.
No, no. Someone did steal copper from the phone wires the other day.
Wow.
Yeah. I saw it on my camera. I saw these guys and I thought, oh, I didn't know what it was. And then the next day Spectrum came and they were like, did you see these guys? And I was like, oh yeah, I saw them. And he was like, well, but I didn't know they stole copper from wires still. I don't know. So now I know.
Oh yeah. And it also means that, you know, give it 5, 10, 20 years, and your little house will be boom, you know, provided the earthquake or the wildfires don't get it.
Right. Exactly. We'll
now,
see.
If you had all the money in the world, would you move back to Boston?
No. Well, I think Boston is a beautiful place. I think it's very, I miss the directness. I miss the food. I miss really good cheap Italian food. Like I miss Fenway Park. You know, there's things, but I outgrew it. I don't know. That's the best way. I lived there for 18 years and I feel like I did my time there, and you know, I move around. I'm a true alcoholic. I like to move.
The geographic. As we say, the geographic cure.
I pulled a few of those. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing I love about single drunk female is I always go in with a chip on my shoulder because I've been going to meetings, 12-step meetings for almost 30 years.
Wow.
And I see places get it wrong. And there's some places that I forgive them more for getting it wrong. Like, okay, I know this is just a stereotype of a meeting, you know, but there's some that I don't. And I thought The Wire did a really good job.
And I agree.
And I thought Single Drunk Female, what? And see, since there's so many movies about people who get drunk, or there's like, you know, 28 days, or there are a lot of things about rehab, but people get, I think, all the 12-step programs, I think they get a lot of things wrong. How were you able to, is it just that it's so prevalent that, oh, the grip is in the program and the director's in the program and the producer's in the program? Or was there something that you had to say, no, that's not how it works? You're like, you got the messiness down, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. I think I try to be as clear with what is real and what is authentic and what is not. And I will say we wouldn't do that, or I try to be as clear about that as possible without being an asshole. And I was on set the first season. I think that really helped, because I was able to even just look at the set and, you know, like the cookies would be here and this, you know what I mean? Like just the physicalness of it too, because meetings have a certain physicality, if that makes any sense to them, that, I think a lot of people also get wrong. One of the first takes we did for season, a young man was handing out pamphlets. And I was like, no. No one would ever hand out pamphlets. You know what I mean? Like, and again, he just thought he was being creative, but I was like, no, that would not happen. So, you know, you just have to work with the actors, and but they get it. I think they get it pretty quickly, and they understood that a meeting hall is sacred too. It is a spiritual place. It's not a religious place, but it's a spiritual place.
You clearly love writing, like you enjoy it. And I hear a lot of writers talk about how hard writing is. And then I hear people say, seriously, are all the coal mining jobs taken? Have you tried something that is genuinely hard? What is it that you like about writing, and why does it come? Why do you like genuinely enjoy it?
I like writing because I'm naturally good at it. I'm a lazy person inherently lazy. And it's just always from a very young age, I started writing little stories, you know, started writing fairy tales as a kid. And it is a way to express myself. And it's also a way to create something out of nothing, which I really like as well. I like a blank page, and then I like filling it with things that make me laugh and make me, you know, I enjoy a good joke, right? I enjoy a good description. I'm a nerd like that. You know, I read things out loud to myself to make sure they sound okay. I get into it. And I also believe that my talent is God given. I don't think that it's wholly mine. It took me a long time to kind of come to that conclusion, but I really, sometimes it's like comes to me and I don't have to quit. Sometimes it's really hard. It's true. So it's not coal mining. I agree with that. But sometimes there is a block, you know, at times. And then there's other times where it's so fast and furious that I almost can't type fast enough to keep up with what's happening in my head, you know.
You ever dictate into the phone?
No, I'm not an auditory person. I'm a sight writing reading type person. I don't listen to podcasts. I can't. I get distracted. I've always been like that. I can listen to music, but I can't listen to words for some reason.
Do you own a car?
I do.
What do you listen to in the car?
I listen to everything, but lately it's been a lot of like classic rock.
Like
the Eagles. I don't know. Does Huey Lewis in the News count as classic rock, which makes me sad? I don't know. It doesn't, right? That's like yacht rock or something. I don't know what it is.
Poppy, I know.
Poppy, yeah. Huey Lewis in the News. I've been listening to Robert Palmer, who I love. I'm listening to Hall & Oates.
Okay, artist or album or that changed your life?
Oh, it changed my life. David Bowie, Young Americans.
Oh, wow. Why?
There's something about that album that I've listened to it probably, I don't know, 1,000 times. He's so free in that, and his voice is so wonderful, and he's not trying to limit it. And the backup singers are amazing. Luther Vandross was a backup singer in that album. I don't know. And the writing, the songwriting is so great. And I don't love the Bowie of the 80s as much, but I love that album. I just think that it's like the perfect album.
And he was one of a kind.
Yeah.
What are you streaming now? Like, what's the series that you just really love?
I'm sad Succession is over, but I also have to acknowledge that it needed to end. So I would say that, and I thought, you know, I'm still thinking about the finale. I didn't love the finale. No, I'm gonna share that. I did not love it. So I'm still like dissecting, like, because when I love something, I dissect why I loved it. And then when I don't love something, I'm also like, well, what do I think didn't work?
I saw something, I think it was Axios said that in media accounts, compared to the actual audience, Succession is way overwritten about, like in media.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. That people at the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal are obsessed with Succession. The rest of the country, not so much.
No.
So what's a, what would an example of like a more blue plate, middle America kind of thing that you like? You're like, yeah, America likes that, but I like it too.
Well, does documentary count?
Yeah, hit me.
Okay. I've watched most of the Arnold documentary, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, fun.
And it's been really, we have some things in common, me and Arnold. He's just really interesting and really, he's the type of person, and I'm similar. He's never happy with, he's like, I just kept going, you know? And I understand that idea. Like, I just want to climb a bigger peak and a bigger one and a bigger one. And that's how I am. So
that's neat.
Yeah.
How did you get sober? Paint me a picture of what the inflection point, the bottom, looked like.
Yeah, I fell in love with that guy. I came back to LA after 3 weeks in Charlotte, and I was heartbroken, thought I was heartbroken. I mean, how can you be heartbroken after meeting one person for 3 weeks? Anyways, very dramatic. Went out every night of the week for a couple weeks, didn't eat, didn't sleep, and I got mono.
You went every night drinking?
Drinking, yes.
And
yes.
Didn't eat and didn't sleep?
Didn't eat, didn't sleep, yeah. And I was maybe 125 pounds at that time. So I was not, you know, I could not handle things very well. And I saw a doctor, so I got mono, I saw a doctor, and he looked at me and he said, are you drinking right now? Like, I wasn't drunk at that moment, but I said, yeah, I'm still drinking. And he said, you're not going to get better. Like, your immune system is compromised, and you're weakening your already weakened immune system, and it's actually going to get worse. And that kind of, like, I heard that, and I started trying to get sober November 2013, like right before Thanksgiving, which is not a good time to try to get sober in my opinion. And, I was sober from then till Christmas Eve. I drank on Christmas Eve and then I was sober till New Year's Eve. Drank on New Year's Eve. I couldn't. My joke is I didn't understand that not drinking or getting sober meant not drinking. Like, I didn't. I couldn't understand that part of it. So then finally, I did the Madam Secretary pilot. I was working for the showrunner of that show, and I did New York City sober, and I had 90 days.
Did you go to meetings?
I did go to meetings, and I thought.
Did you have a sponsor?
I did have a sponsor. I got on the plane to go home. Everyone was drinking around me, celebrating. I thought, well, I can celebrate. Drank again. Got back to LA, had one more drink at a bar, half a beer at a bar, came home to my apartment, which was infested with water bugs. My neighbor comes over, she was a friend, and she looks at me and she's like, Simone, you look crazy. And because I also was undiagnosed bipolar at that time. I'm also bipolar. I share that openly. And the next day I went to a meeting. I said, you know, I'm new. I just drank again. I don't want to ever drink again. And I haven't since April 8th, 2014. I was done.
Congratulations.
I was done. Yeah, I didn't kill anyone. I mean, it could have been, I drove drunk for 6 years. I mean, this could have ended very differently. I'm very lucky that I didn't get a DUI or hurt someone or myself.
How do I ask this? In what ways do you see a kind of a tap on the shoulder from the universe or an angel or a divine intervention? In what ways were you getting this tap, tap, tap? Because plenty of people could hear that from the neighbor and have no recollection. Like it would make no impact whatsoever.
I knew the last 2 years of my drinking, you know, it's in my family. My grandfather was sober the last 30 years of his life. Yes. And I never met him. He died the year I was born. I really wish I could have met him. I think we would have had a lot to talk about. Anyway, so it is in my family. And yeah, so I knew that. I also knew that not everyone, you know, I have this memory. I was a year prior, I was living in West Hollywood, and I would go to my apartment door and I'd be drunk every night. And I'd try to open my door and I couldn't do it. And I would drop my keys every night. I don't know. It was this recurring. It was like, oh, I'm drunk again. Oh, I'm drunk again. Oh, I'm drunk again. And it was this thing where I just knew, I knew I had to get sober, but I didn't know how I was going to do it. I had no idea because drinking was such a part of my life. And I drank with everything, with joy and pain and, you know, and I thought at the time that when I was grieving my father while drinking that I was grieving him, but I actually wasn't, right? That was one of the first things I learned when I got sober is my car stopped and all the stuff from the back came to the front. And that was the biggest thing, was grief for me. I cried the first 6 months I was sober. It was really, really painful. I don't ever want to go through that again. Ever. So if, you know, God willing, I won't. Yeah.
You get the feeling your dad's proud of you.
Yes. I saw a psychic and she said, he's my spirit guide, which I believe. And I said, Dad, what do you think of the show? And he said to her, it's just okay.
And you did not take offense.
No. You know what? He wants me to do more. He wants me to keep going. And I want to keep going.
Yeah.
So, and I will. Yeah.
That's how you know when these intuitives or mediums or psychics are telling the truth, is when they're not like blowing, they're not, you know, puffing you up. They're delivering that, meh, it's okay.
It's okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
it's not horrible.
Yeah, he would want me to keep going and I'm gonna keep going. So
what does keep going look like?
Create more shows and create different kinds of shows and tell stories about things that most people don't tell and just get better at my craft and I think there are some people in my situation that might rest on their laurels here a little bit, and I'm not one to do that. And I like to work. This strike has been very hard for me because I agree with the strike. Don't get me wrong. I think we are doing the right thing, but I have to admit that I like to work and not working has been tough. Yeah.
What can a chatbot, what can AI never do?
An AI can never know what it's like to get sober. Period. End of story. They can read all the sober literature they want. I don't care. They, you know, in my show, I put, she said, I'm putting on makeup for my withdrawal zits. And I had so many people on Instagram be like, thank you for sharing that. Like, that's a real thing. And I thought about it because people were like, what would AI not know? I'm like, AI would not know about withdrawal zits. There's no way I would know that.
What's your tag? What's your name on Instagram?
Simone Finch. It's very creative. I keep Finch, it really, really complicated.
Finch like the bird.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's neat. I was talking to some guys who had worked in entertainment television. And believe me, the same is true of news, TV news, where I worked for 32 years. And they said there were some things that they did that after a while, you're like, I don't care if they give me a gazillion dollars. I just can't do this. You don't have to name names, but is there anything that you're working on something and you're like, ugh, well, I could have delivered Domino's pizza or driven Uber and gotten a lot more satisfaction?
You mean like, is there any other job I could do?
No, I mean, have you ever done a job and were like,
Yes. I was a hostess. I was a hostess for years. Then I became a waiter. And then I was a good waiter, believe it or not.
Well, I was thinking more like, have you ever worked on a project that you're like, just take my name off of it?
Oh, no, I have not.
Good for you.
Lucky for that. Yeah, I've worked on some great, fantastic projects. So
Go ahead.
My friend, one of my writer friends on The Conners, he's a executive producer and he's a great guy. And he said, Simone, you've only worked on hits. Just wait for the day when you don't work on a hit. I said, you're right. I'm lucky. What can I say? He said, yeah, you're so lucky. You're so lucky. Just wait for the day. I was like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, invariably.
Right.
Do you worry about age?
Yes. Every woman worries about age in this business. Yes. I do. I'm already worried I'm too old.
Is it getting like a little bit better maybe?
No. I mean, I don't know. I do feel like there's a few at the top and then that's kind of it. Whereas I feel like there's a lot more men in their 50s that are, you know what I mean? Like it's still rare to see. It is getting better. But even then, I'll tell you, marching, like picketing, it's mostly dudes still.
Your series, Single Drunk Female, for which you're the creator, executive producer, are you what they call a showrunner?
No, I have not been a showrunner the last two seasons, but I hope that changes.
What does a showrunner do?
Showrunner is the they're kind of the CEO, let's say. They're in charge of every aspect of production, from writing to producing to post production to hiring the crew, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. It must be super weird seeing this beautiful actress like playing you. And there must be the overwhelming temptation to say, no, it didn't happen exactly that way. To what extent can you put distance between yourself and this and say, this is a fictionalized version and blah, 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 blah. And to what extent are you like, to what extent can you help her understand? And to what extent are you like, no, I don't need to be giving her information about my crashing and burning or whatever?
I mean, I think Sophia is a wonderful, intuitive actress, and I have told her a lot about my life. So honestly, I haven't had to really be like, no, it's not like that, because she's so good. And frankly, sometimes when she does make different choices, it's the better choice, you know? And I've acknowledged that, like, actors take your lines and they do things with them that you never imagined. Same with Allie. You know, Allie is wonderful. She's fantastic. They're both fantastic in these roles, and they're fantastic together. And they have created something that is different from my life. And you know what? And now I'm kind of grateful, to be honest, you know, that it's not a carbon copy, because that's, in some ways, not as interesting. It served as a great foundation, right? But they've built something, you know, even better, I think.
Well, to your point, boomers like me think it's a lot of fun to see Allie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
And she is. And she's great as the mother, and she's wonderfully.
She is.
This is horrible, but tell me how Sophia pronounces her last name.
Sophia Black D'Elia.
D'Elia. As a Southerner, I would.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Not the first.
Allie is Allie Sheedy.
Who, yeah.
A bunch of us remember. Oh, Breakfast Club, you know.
Exactly.
But it's so fun. It's so fun. And I didn't binge watch. I'm to the part where she discovers basically Al-Anon, but you don't say Al-Anon. Why was that? You say family and friends, which is exactly what it is. A lot of people confuse Al-Anon with Alcoholics Anonymous, and Al-Anons are like, say the name. And I'm like, the general public gets confused, I think.
We're not really allowed to say the name because we don't want to have to include Al-Anon General Service in our script notes, basically.
Gotcha. And the interesting thing is, and we're finding this, is that some people are better served in, let's say, Naranon or Codependence Anonymous. Or
right.
There is a whole family of things, the same way as some people are better with Cocaine Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. You know, people have to find what worked. Were drugs a part of your story?
Not really. I'm really an alcoholic. I was a wino.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love wine. I wanted to become a sommelier.
I get it.
Just hilarious. Yeah.
And there's almost the people nowadays that are like, well, all you ever drank was beer. And I'm like, you do realize there are people with distended livers and end-stage alcoholism that people are smuggling them beer into hospitals.
Right. Right.
And people think of beer as just like, it's like you're drinking iced tea.
Yeah, it's not. It's not.
It's not. It is a toxin. There's this term California sober, meaning people who don't drink or use drugs, except they smoke weed all the time. Have you ever heard that phrase?
I have.
How do you feel about that?
This is my opinion.
Right.
I believe if you have problems with drugs and alcohol, that weed is a drug.
Mm.
And especially if you have mental health problems. So weed can induce psychosis. So in people who are mentally, including me, I'm bipolar. So I believe that is marijuana maintenance, to use the old term. I don't think it works. That's me personally. But it would not work for me. I need to not be on any mind-altering substances unless it's at the dentist or in a doctor's care of some kind. Yeah. And then that's a relapse.
There's a huge relationship between bipolar disorder and that kind of Venn diagram. People with bipolar disorder vastly overrepresented amongst those with alcohol use disorder. And substance use disorder in general. Self-medication is what they call it. What has been most helpful to you? What are your absolutes when it comes to treating your bipolar disorder?
I'm on meds. I'm on four meds. Yeah, I'm on four medications. The big one for me that changed my life is lithium. lithium I started to, and which is very old school. It's not, you know, it's not the new sexy drug. And we tried all the new sexy drugs, and my psychiatrist said, you know what, we're going to try lithium and see what happens. And I tried lithium, and within a couple days, I felt so much better. It was like, I say this, it was like somebody turned the lights on in my head. They had been off my whole life. And I hope, not going to let, I can take lithium the rest of my life because I love it. It's really, it helps with my mood. It helps stabilize me. It helps to, I believe that as long as I take meds, I don't really want to drink because I'm stable. You're right. When I was unstable and not on medication is when drinking was the most attractive to me. And when I did drink the most, because I was medicating something, right? And now, as long as I take them every day, twice a day, you know, is this fun? No. Is it sexy? No. Do I wish I was normal? Of course I do. Of course. There are days when I'm like, oh God, being mentally ill is such a pain in the ass. But
it is.
You know, I mean, what is the alternative? Well, the alternatives are drinking or death or a psych ward. Those are my alternatives, and they're not very attractive.
Just imagine if you had a hit like Single Drunk Female, and you celebrated by going to, you know, the wine country. That would not be pretty. You know, it's not, mm-hmm. And it's also not the recipe, just pragmatically, for doing the next right thing, for achieving the next big thing for you.
No. Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing for me in wine country anymore.
Yeah. What do you enjoy doing?
I love to deadlift.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I got into deadlifting. Sorry, my gardener, whatever. I got into deadlifting a year ago, mm-hmm. and I'm up to 165 now.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel powerful. It's exercise, and it's the only way to reverse aging.
Do you, how did you learn how to do that without injuring?
I got a personal trainer. It's the fanciest thing I've ever done.
Man or woman?
Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she taught you how to lift.
Yes.
Wow. Good stuff. If you and I got struck by lightning today, and the only mm-hmm. thing that survived was this little piece of digital audio, what is your legacy?
That alcoholism doesn't have to be the end, that it's just the beginning, that sobriety is transformative. It's transformed my life, and I think it can transform yours.
Wow. Person who knows you best in the world.
Probably my mother. Yeah, my mother.
At a memorial, what would she say about you?
She'd call me an imp. No. she would say I was a little bit of a wild child, but that I kind of cleaned up and made something of myself.
Would you like to make feature length films? What would you like to do?
I really would rather stay in TV personally. I don't know if the right movie came along, I would do it, but it hasn't yet. So I'm waiting and seeing. We'll see what happens. No, I'm open to it.
There are so many creative possibilities.
Right.
With the variety of streaming platforms out there.
Right.
And I know there's a lot of doomsaying, a lot of, this is turned into crap, blah, blah, blah. But you keep seeing people create new and different stuff. There was something on Hulu called Woke.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
So you're doing good stuff.
Yeah, who knows? Good stuff happens all the time. There's just a lot of, you have to sift through some stuff, you know.
You do.
Yeah, yeah.
But it can also get discovered in just about anywhere.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. And people are like, they have so much, they have less tolerance for the broadcast, you know, the vast creation by committee, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah.
God bless you. You were so good.
Thank you. God
this.
Bless you.
I
Thank you
really
so much.
Appreciate
Thanks for having
it.
Me. Thank you. You asked Thank you. Really wonderful questions. So.
Did I listen?
Yeah, you did.
How do you know?
Did. I don't know. I mean, I felt seen and heard.
You can find Single Drunk Female on Hulu, streaming on Hulu. They've got a couple of seasons out already. And you can find Simone Finch on Instagram at Simone Finch, like the bird. Thank you, Simone. It was a ton of fun.
In Her Words is a production of the Queen City Podcast Network in cooperation with Balto Creative Media. Allison Andrews at Andrews Creative, Rachel Clapp Miller, and Roshonda Pratt are developmental producers. Sally Higgins at Higgins & Owens tries to keep us legal. Our music is A Day at the Park by the group Pictures of the Floating World. Your announcer is Catherine Smith. That's me. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and take a moment to rate and review. It really helps others find us. If you love us, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com. Look for Man Listening, one word, no spaces. A small investment makes a big difference in lifting up the voices of women.
A huge shout out and thank you to everyone who has supported me from the very beginning, from manlistening.com to In Her Words, the podcast, and now to my new for-profit venture, Voice Locket. VoiceLocket.com. Because we need to capture these voices saying authentic, meaningful things while we can. Check it out. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your support. We believe one voice can change the conversation. Thanks so much.